When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, hey there, and welcome to Trashy Divorces. This is Erica Kelly.
What? new voice. Y'all have asked for the Trashy Divorces of Elizabeth Taylor.
You have.
You've asked. We're delivering. We couldn't do it without our very good friend and special guest star for today's ep, Erica Kelly from Southern Fried True Crime. Thank you for coming.
You. We are so thrilled you're here. It's so good to see you in person again, and thanks for coming to Atlanta.
Of course. I love Atlanta. I love you guys. I love this podcast. Could have worked out better.
Elizabeth Taylor will make you do a lot of things.
Oh, my God. I would do anything
about
for her.
So we're about to find out. So before we get to the amazing Elizabeth Taylor,
yeah,
let's do a quick Patreon.
Absolutely.
Whoa. How much fun this week has been. Y'all, this week on Patreon, if you're not checking it out, let me tell you what's been happening. Trashy tidbits this week. Stacey, you did a follow-up on presidential yachts.
Presidential yachts, man.
I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat.
Which Elizabeth Taylor was on a boat for a long time, too.
So many years she was on a boat. It's all a tie-in. I did an update on baby Archie and Meghan and Harry, yep, and Frogmore Cottage and
a little bit of Kate and Will, yeah.
Scandalous tidbits. Our fun with Dunn this week was about the opportunity of failure. That was some amazing stuff. Hope everybody on Patreon is enjoying it. If that sounds interesting to you, you can join us over there for as little as $2 a month. I want to give a big shout out to our new patrons this week. Anna, Lauren, Shelly, Sherry, Natalie, and Lenick.
Thank you. Y'all so much.
Are awesome.
Lenick is one of my patrons.
What?
Yay!
Yes.
Double shout out.
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
Crossover.
Yes, exactly.
This episode is magic. So this week, Elizabeth Taylor, Diamond Girl.
Yep.
Sure do shine.
Seven husbands, eight marriages. Is that right? Eight weddings, seven husbands?
Yes. Yes. Eight marriages, seven husbands.
Yeah. She recycled one. She did. Very eco-friendly.
Reduce, reuse, recycle, man. This raucous, rowdy woman and her love for life and her lust for everything.
Booze, yeah, and cuss words.
She did love her booze and cuss words.
She was a badass. Like,
she's
let's
my hero, booze and cuss words.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
She also loved love. I love that about her. There's a reason she was married that many times.
Married lots of times. Each one, I think that we determined in recording that the legend of her is so much trashier than her actual relationships really, really were.
Completely agree.
Yeah, that's true.
So, we're all ready? Let's do this. Elizabeth Taylor.
Happy Mother's Day. To all of our listeners for whom that applies. In whatever way works for you.
That's exactly it. Be a mother or something.
Yeah.
Mother dragons.
Yeah.
Mother Yorkies. Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day.
Particularly to the mother of dragons.
All right. Let's talk about the mother beauty, the goddess of all Hollywood, Elizabeth Taylor.
The patron saint of trashy divorces.
Pretty much true.
All right, let's do it.
Let's do it. Oh, it's a big day. It's a big day.
It is a big day.
It's the biggest of days. We're doing it.
Mother's Day. No, that's not it.
No.
I mean, happy
Mother's Day to all the mothers out there.
Yes, everybody.
The mother of all trashy divorces. Elizabeth Taylor.
Kind of the patron saint. Can we get a vote of candle with Elizabeth Taylor on it?
Oh,
that might.
We need a vote of candle with Elizabeth Taylor on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Erica, I know you love, particularly Taylor and Burton.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's your favorite. Yeah. So,
now, Erica, it's fun that your true crime is amazing. I'm a fan. But what's funny is Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton is how we became friends when we met.
Yeah, I know. We talked about it forever. I was like, you've got to do this one.
Somehow we stumbled on it in like the first 3 minutes of conversation and boom, we were in like Elizabeth
Taylor.
When
you told me the idea for this podcast, I was like, you have to do Liz and Dick.
So there's we no have been waiting. That. Fans yeah. have asked, yeah. like, come on, when are you? I'm like, nope, we got to wait because we have
the
specialist guest coming in.
We got a lot of feedback after your Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher story.
Why aren't you?
Season yeah. one. Like, oh, so, yeah. Yeah. like, Elizabeth is next, right?
So,
no,
yes.
she wasn't,
well,
but no.
But, today is the day.
Today.
So, Stacey, you and I are doing something a little strange this week. In
weird format. Format mix-up, yep.
We've split up the husbands.
Yes.
You've got half the story. I have half the story.
Mm-hmm.
Let me go ahead. You guys want to get into it?
Yeah.
I'm excited? Okay. Apropos to nothing. Let's just get it out of the way.
Okay.
Astrology.
Oh, my God.
Just to get out of the way.
I'm with her on this one.
Sure. All right.
Elizabeth
outvoted.
Taylor is a Pisces, a water sign. Just to let you know, the most compatible signs with Pisces are generally considered to be Taurus, Cancer, Scorpio, Capricorn. Out of Elizabeth Taylor's seven husbands, 4 out of 7 fell into these good match things. She ended up with 2 Cancers, Nikki Hilton and Mike Todd, 2 Leos, Michael Wilding and Eddie Fisher. And what's funny, marriage 1, 2, 3, 4 went Cancer, Leo, Cancer, Leo.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Super weird. She had a Capricorn in there. An Aquarius, that air sign John Warner, out in left field, doesn't make any sense with anything else. But 4 of her husbands, she actually managed to find in a good...
So Aquarius is an air sign?
Yeah.
Okay, I used to joke about that because I'm a Scorpio and I'm water, and I always told my husband we make bubbles.
Aww.
So you had sweet? Some astrology before? Yeah.
I do, yes.
Your astrology is a little sweeter than Stacey's
Even
natural
I'm
disaster
Scorpio,
take.
I know.
Just kill them all. Yeah. Burned alive. So there is your rundown. I will keep that on the ready just if y'all have questions
oh,
throughout.
Sure.
So today, Elizabeth Taylor, we're here again with our specific lens of trashy divorces. So... out of a life that is 79 years long, what a tale.
She's incredible.
Oh, my God. So we're going to fangirl over her so hard for a while. However, 7 husbands. Just want to give a little bit of a brief background.
I was going to say, do you mm-hmm. want to open with, because
her
my,
childhood
yeah,
stuff.
I've got the first husband.
Just
and
a little.
So it picks up when she's 18 years old, but she's yeah. already been famous forever at this point. So
oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's your little post-it note of how we get to marriage number one. Elizabeth Taylor... born in England, her parents scoot her out of the country along with themselves and her brother to get out of World War II. She's born in 1932. So by the time war is ravaging England, they're like, yep, gonna head on over to California. Apparently, Elizabeth is the most beautiful child that has ever, ever existed.
She really was.
Like from,
did you see pictures?
Yeah.
I'm not sure of child,
oh,
but
God,
even as a
baby. Gorgeous.
My God, as just, a young woman, like, and this is pre-Photoshop days, so photographs
oh,
of her, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Adults, kid, it doesn't matter. Everyone comments on just her stunning. So head on over to California. Mom is a semi-ish actress, but she realizes, whoa, my kid has something more amazing than I do. Mom is super controlling. Ends up going in for her first part. They need a kid who can speak with an English accent. Goes
Perfect.
In for her first part. No credit. Not listed in the credits at all.
No.
But somebody sees her and is like, hey, we need that kid. She's grown up in England on a horse farm. So
right.
she can
yeah,
ride
she can
a
ride
horse.
Horses. She can speak with an English accent.
So there you go.
You
here
a few
comes.
Years and she can kiss, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry. Right.
So here bad. Comes National Velvet at the age of 12, which makes her America's new favorite sweetheart child actress.
Mm-hmm.
So she is rolling through this preteen movie actress thing. She's not yet becoming a woman. We're going to get to that in a second. Here's something that I came across that I thought was amazing. Her brother is apparently prettier than her.
Yes.
Right?
I remember this from the book.
Oh,
from Furious Love.
That's
they talk
it.
About it. Yeah.
Such a good book that you recommended. Furious Love.
One of my favorite ever biographies.
So good. But apparently her brother, right, is so pretty. He's even prettier than she is. And mom, controlling mom, wants to get him down to the studio to screen test for a movie.
I remember this.
And kid's like, nope, totally shaves his head the night
that.
Before.
That's badass. Like, hell no, Mom. I'm not doing that.
I want to go live the life and be an accountant. I do not want to be a Hollywood movie star.
Yeah, I mean. I
think it's great. So he's apparently prettier. Oh, abusive relationship. Her dad is very abusive. And there was, right after her first marriage, apparently they sort of reconciled. Because she's so, Elizabeth, so caring. And,
yeah,
like, got it.
Warm.
But I can imagine my dad. You know, I'm making more money today than he's ever seen in his lifetime. Yeah. He has no control. And you think about how if Mom is that controlling over Elizabeth, how probably her attention is totally shifted husband to kid. Anyway.
Well, and especially back then, too, the woman did not make more money. And then could you imagine your child making more money than man? Like,
that's exactly right.
Your preteen, yeah.
Not the greatest household. A super controlling mom, abusive father, and under the pressure of the studio, up into Good Girls Don't Want to Wait, things happen.
Sure.
Lead us in, Stacey.
Sure. So in 1949, Elizabeth Taylor meets Nicky Hilton, Conrad Hilton Jr. of the hotel. He's the heir to the hotel chain. He's apparently a piece of shit, but the studio is really invested in this because they are filming, well, Elizabeth is filming Father of the Bride at the time. So the studio, which at the time, they just had such enormous power over the lives of the people in their employ, they arrange a wedding for the star of the movie to this piece of shit. Like, the guy's 23, 24, she's 18. She's already been engaged twice. And again, these were like scripted. Yeah, yeah, the whole thing. It was just
it's
media.
It's always for publicity.
Yeah, it was just a media thing. So at the ceremony itself, the studio gets every actor who has ever played Elizabeth Taylor's parents seats them with her actual parents in the church. There are like 3,000 fans outside. There are 600 people inside. Fun fact about Nicky Hilton. His stepmother for a time was Zsa Zsa Gabor, with whom he had an affair. So gross. So gross.
What would the age difference have been? Did you
huge.
Catch that?
Huge. Maybe not as huge as it could have.
Because she might have married somebody much older, but still.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So,
wow.
Not sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Icky. So, yeah. So the studio basically like marries its star off to this guy who turns out to just be like an abusive alcoholic, gambling addict. They head off to Europe for a 3-month long like honeymoon there. Within like 2 weeks, he's beating her up. Yeah. It's a nightmare.
Well, he's drinking and gambling, like just he's gone. Mm-hmm. He's done.
So fun fact. Yeah. fun fact is that Howard Hughes is said to have offered to finance a movie studio for 18-year-old Elizabeth Taylor if she would marry him instead of Nicky Hilton.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of creepy.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's incredible, but it's
he tried to buy a bride. Like, the studio owned a bride to auction off, and he tried to purchase
Howard
her.
Howard Hughes was always scooping up young
that's
girls
true.
With...
That's true.
That's not an unusual story, but it takes a lot of sack to go after Taylor.
Some hoot
yeah.
spot.
Yeah, right?
Well, I mean, she was younger then, but still, no. Yeah, that's a bold move.
Yeah. It's gross, though. I mean, there's something gross about that. Okay, so they marry May 6th, 1950. 3,000 fans outside, 600 guests inside. The studio paid for the whole thing, had a $3,500 dress, you know, custom made for her because they're marketing Father of the Bride. Like,
exactly.
This coincided with the, it's so gross.
The dress is amazing, by the way.
Yeah.
If you looked at pictures of that, yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, yeah, I saw. But I mean, it's really sad. Like, they hooked her up with this terrible person who basically ended up beating the shit out of her. One bright spot. Alicia, when they were abroad, she ends up like dude bros out gambling all night. She's playing canasta with Wallace Simpson, the Duchess of Windsor over, I guess, in Paris.
Oh, man, they stayed friends for decades.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. So Taylor later wrote, the honeymoon in Europe lasted 2 weeks. I should say the marriage lasted for 2 weeks. Then came yours sincerely, disillusionment, rude and brutal. So, yeah, just the drinking, the gambling, the being out all night, the beating her up.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the worst of it. considering she was a pretty fine gambler and drinker herself.
I mean, that's...
it's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, he was apparently not into like doing that stuff with his new wife.
Well, that's where he missed out.
Agreed.
Yeah.
100%. So yeah, after this 3-month trip, she goes home, moves back in with her mother, and files for divorce. They were married for 205 days.
Wow. Yeah, like 6 months.
But, good for but her. Again, like knowing the amazing power that MGM had over her life is, it's troubling. That
it is
troubling.
Okay. Can you imagine?
And obviously they didn't give a shit if she divorced that quickly. Because I guess it's not. Like, okay, the publicity for the movie's over. We've had our wedding. It's fine.
Well, that was going to be my question.
You
is,
do you.
Yeah, exactly.
The studio has that much power over you. How shitty does that marriage have to be for you to be like, yeah, I'm out. I'm 18 years old and I'm going to chalk up one divorce inside of a year and fuck off because this guy is such a garbage can.
Well, it's also possible that he bruised her face or something.
And the studio would not have approved of that.
Yeah,
no.
Don't fuck with
don't
the merch.
Damage the goods.
Wait, did we say that for?
Yeah, we can.
Oh, fuck yes.
Okay, yeah. Don't fuck with the merchandise. That's basically how the studio would have looked at that.
Yeah,
yep.
That makes more sense.
Okay. Yeah, so I was wondering about that too, because yeah, I mean they owned her. They
really did own their actor's body and soul. I mean, yeah. She's definitely not the only one.
Okay, so about Nikki Hilton. Which, again, the family is still using that name because there is a current Nikki Hilton. This is very weird to me because this dude, he goes on to marry an Oklahoma oil heiress, but he never quit drinking. And so, like, 6 years in, she divorces him. Her name was Patricia McClintock. They had 2 sons. And then and just a few years later, Nikki is dead at the age of 42 of an alcoholism-related heart attack.
Wow.
So like he just...
I didn't realize he died that young.
Yeah. He never quit with his his poor life choices. So
good for him.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
So that's marriage number
it's
one.
A terrible thing.
Marriage
it's
number
it's
one.
Terrible.
Done and
well,
done.
You can see how she starts to think of him as throwaway. Like, yeah. That wasn't a real marriage.
No.
I wasn't in love.
Right.
Let me ask, do we want to do trash cans as we go along?
Oh.
Let's twist it up. I think if we tried to do them all at the end, that's just too many numbers flying around.
Yeah.
So, Nikki Hilton, number of trash cans, we'll ask Erica first.
I forget what your numbering is. Like, do we go to 5?
Do we
five,
go to 5?
I give him a fucking 5. Done. I hated that guy.
Yeah. I'd do, like, 5 with a few on fire. Like,
yeah.
I mean, just beating your... I don't... Oh, my God. Just whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
5 trash cans and a punch in the nose.
Yeah.
Perfect. Done and done. Okay. Next up. Batter right. up.
I also have the second husband. This is Michael Wilding. Michael Charles Gauntlet Wilding.
Fancy.
A British
actor.
Throw
down the gauntlet. Seriously.
So he was a big star in England when he met Elizabeth in 1949 on the British set of the film The Conspirator. She was 16, so, you know, she still had to marry Nikki Hilton. But when she returned to England in 51 or 52 to make Ivanhoe, she went after him. Like, he was really the opposite of Nikki Hilton. He was older. He was mature. He was secure.
A gentleman?
Yes, he was a gentleman. He was self-made in ways that, like, a hotel heir was...
He was a brat,
yeah.
Basically, yeah. Now, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Wilding had come into London's film scene in 1933 when he was 21. So he'd previously earned a living as like a sketch artist. He'd wandered around Europe like doing
that's pretty cool
pictures. Yeah, so he decided he wanted to get into like film set design, which seemed like a good avenue for that skill. But the studio where he showed up was like, actually, we need extras. So he was an extra on a few films and kind of got the bug. So he makes a stage debut in 34, begins getting named roles in films in 35. And it was like 7 or 8 years of just hard work, steady work, like learning the craft. And then he's just a star. Like in 43, there's a movie called Dear Octopus. In 44, English Without Tears. And this is the war years too, when I'm sure the British public was craving, distraction from...
A lot of the great films really,
Yeah, by the late 40s, he just had this like string of successful films with the actress Anna Nagel. And it looks like it was a mix of dramas and romantic comedies, but like I was like, oh, this is like Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan. That's what's happening here.
Nice.
Because the two they just kept getting cast together and like the movies just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then he kinda like stepped away, paired with other you know, leads.
It was just never as charming.
Didn't work. Yeah. So his star was sort of starting to decline then around the time that Elizabeth shows up for Ivanhoe. So anyway, they get married. Let me see if I have the date on that. I think I jumped into this story about their house. All right. So they get married.
1952.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Early in the marriage, they were living, I guess they were probably always living in Beverly Hills. So one day Elizabeth notices that the house behind theirs was for sale. And, you know, it's all like walled compounds over there. So, you know, she's 22, 21, 22. She's like, hey, I want to go look at that house. So they climb the wall and like trespass onto the property.
Perfect.
Find an open window, climb in and just like check it out. And it like turns into their hideout. Like it's a clubhouse for Elizabeth Taylor and her much older husband, who I think is probably just humoring
what
the
do they
fuck
do?
Out
just
of
like
her.
Bring yeah, over liquor and cards?
Yeah. They That's stock hilarious. They stock the fridge with beer. The realtor will
I think
show
that's
up.
Romantic.
Yeah. Yeah. The realtor will show up with now. Like prospective buyers. Apparently they're always pulling the for sale sign out of the yard so that nobody will notice.
That's
that
hilarious.
Anyway, they eventually got a loan from MGM and purchased it. So this thing hit the market in 2018, and I found a Curbed story. It was listed for $15.9
million.
Whoa. Had not been sold in 21 years. So this is what it said. It turned out that Westlake Village architect George McLean had Taylor in mind when designing the lavishly appointed estate. The house. Thank you, Ruby. The house is being sold with an adjacent lot and sits on more than 2 acres of land off Beverly Estates Drive, just above the Beverly Hills border. 7,761 square feet of
Whoa.
Living space.
Good Lord.
6 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms, with walls of glass, plenty of access points to outdoor courtyards and patios. The grounds are dotted with vegetation, sculptures, and fountains, along with a swimming pool and a spa. The pool deck offers impressive views of the surrounding hills and city below. And I'll link to that because, God, the pictures are...
Wow.
Yeah, staggering. So... Not everyone in Elizabeth Taylor's orbit supported her engagement to Michael Wilding. So here we introduce...
We have some objections, some conscientious objectors.
Yes.
Gotcha.
So this personality is new to me, but I think not to you. This is Hedda Hopper, the extremely powerful gossip columnist, was fully against it and went so far as to like hint in her column. And again, this is the early 50s that Michael Wilding and another actor named Stuart Granger were lovers.
Oh yeah, that's all they had to do back then, really.
Yeah, Wilding sued for libel. He won $3 million.
What?
In a judgment.
You can't throw that around in the 50s.
No. And Hedda Hopper would go on to distinguish herself not in a good way during the Red Scare by naming suspected communists. Because she was a bullying piece of shit.
No, she's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, she's kind
of
an ass.
She comes back up in one of my stories, but she was the one who originally super promoted Elizabeth and was 100% on her side when she was very young.
Okay.
Look at this star.
She probably felt possessive of her, though.
Yeah. And so Hedda
Hopper
felt that it was certainly her business to involve herself in Elizabeth's business through the rest of her life.
You gotta wonder, in a way, if she didn't actually truly mean it, like... She didn't like the guy. She didn't think he was right. Like, if she felt that strongly about Elizabeth.
Yeah. Like, I'm really trying to watch out for you here.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they wound up not being a good match, obviously, so.
But also, calling out your friends to sell out communist. Like.
Oh, no. Yeah.
That yeah, it seems like. Pale. Yeah, she seemed to feel pretty possessive over everyone's life in Hollywood. Like,
that's true.
It's a weird story. I mean, and making up things is just not cool. Fake news. All right. So Michael's career in England had already begun to decline. And of course, hers was just ascending. So the February 1952 wedding, I did have the date, to Elizabeth, it really seemed like it was going to open doors in America, in Hollywood for him. Because, you know, huge star in England, but hadn't really crossed the pond.
Right.
So in May, MGM signs him and offers him a role in the film Latin Lovers. He would be playing a romantic rival of the lead seeking Lana Turner's affections. Terrible. and he turns it down because he doesn't feel like it's a meaty enough role for for an actor of his caliber and stature.
Turns down the first studio role offered to him.
Right,
wow.
And the studios,
okay.
That is not how the studios play. So
no.
They suspend him without pay. There's this whole, like, suspension process that, I mean, I think he knew that's what would happen, but, like, just bold and ultimately a very bad gamble. Like, he ends up making some movies, Torch Song in 53 with Joan Crawford. He got loaned out to 20th Century Fox in 54 for The Egyptian, which, like, was a flop. In 55, Elizabeth goes to Texas to film Giant with Rock Hudson, a lifelong friend, James Dean, who ended up dying before the production ended in a car accident.
Tragic.
I assume that this experience was searing for Elizabeth Taylor. More bad news. So the Confidential, the gossip magazine, kind of the original Hollywood gossip rag, I think.
One of them.
Is that true? Okay.
Well, I mean, there was Screen Time, there's Photoplay. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch, thousand of them, but Confidential was the first one really to go into spilling the tea and the dirt. Because if they had a verifiable source, what other news outlets would never dare print, just because it wasn't.
Well, they.
It was too much. Nothing was ever too much for Confidential.
Yeah, they spilled some tea about Michael Wilding. So, according to Confidential, he started spending time at the appropriately named Strip City. What do you think happened there?
They cook a lot of steaks.
What's up?
They cook a lot of steaks.
Prime Rib Village. No. Oh,
he's bad.
Strip City, with Elizabeth out of town, ends up bringing some of the dancers home and has an affair. The studio, shockingly, was not really happy to have this story out in the world because they have a product that is world's sexiest woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
you, like, don't want her cheated on.
No. If she can't keep her man happy, who in the hell has any hope of keeping their, like, they were incensed. She was much more sanguine about it, but they divorced the next year.
Yeah.
They did have two sons, and she went on to say of Michael Wilding, "He was one of the nicest people I'd ever known, but I'm afraid I gave him rather a rough time, sort of henpecked him, and probably wasn't mature enough for him, and a 20-year age difference would do that." So.
Well, that's, you gotta like that she takes responsibility for it, too, though. Yeah, like, I appreciate that honesty.
She is so generous to her exes. Consistently.
And she's genuine. She's a genuine person.
Yeah.
Despite everything.
Yeah. Well, I think with Elizabeth, she always she's living right there. And there is part of her, like, I'm not condoning abuse at all. Nikki Hilton abused her.
Yeah.
But on the opposite side of that, there's something very much in Elizabeth's makeup that likes that caveman sort of thing. Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think Michael Wilding was. No,
that's getting to this. Like, she dared him. Like, they're doing a crossword one day, and she's being whatever she's being. And she's like, hit me, slap me, like, get mad at me. And that, he's a proper British gentleman, also a Leo, like, tender and regal and royal. And I don't need to. No, that's not the way I roll.
Yeah.
So I don't think he was, quite masculine or strong-arming.
He wasn't butch enough for her.
He wasn't butch enough for her.
That's fair.
It seems fair. I mean, I think, though, that they did go on to have, like, I think they remained friends. Obviously, they're co-parents.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they remained, warm for the rest of his life.
But guess who was?
Who?
Mike Todd.
Oh, God.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Let's do trash cans for Mike Wilding.
Sure.
Sorry.
Sure. Not.
I don't know. Strip City sucks, but yeah.
That's milder.
It sounds like she really was not looking for, like, a hot, sexy marriage. She was looking for a
stability.
Like, yeah, for like a.
Well, she was never alone. Yeah. She went from marriage to marriage to marriage to marriage until she landed in her 50s. Until she spent
a
decade as a single person. By herself. So when you relationship hop and never get to know yourself and you're only knowing yourself through the eyes of other people, you have to be in a relationship because you don't have that worth on your own.
Right.
So
and he was the opposite of Nikki.
I mean, very much.
He definitely didn't have that many trash cans.
Yeah.
So
Two and a half.
That seems fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he went on to live, I think he passed away in 1979, but he had epilepsy and fell. Oh. And got a head injury, which ultimately killed him.
Well, that's sad.
Yeah. But I mean, again, like, not... Nikki Hilton is tough to... You're going to trash can your life. Tough to top that. So he didn't...
No, I mean, I
kind of know where the story is going, but that might be the highest ranked. Nikki Hilton is just a scumbag.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah.
So who is butch enough for old Elizabeth Taylor?
Tell us.
Now, this is the 8 marriages, 7 husbands, once a widow. Mm-hmm. This is sad. You guys, y'all may remember us telling a little bit about Mike Todd in the Debbie Reynolds, mm-hmm. Eddie Fisher trashy divorces back from season 1. I think that's like episode 3, if you want to go check that out.
Something like that, yeah.
Mike Todd, gosh, he's older, twice her age. 40, late 40s. She's 24. He's in his late 40s. But he is a superstar. He has invented this particular way of filming that takes multiple cameras, but he is a big deal. He's got plenty of money, plenty of talent. He is vital AF. Let's go ahead and...
Man's man. That's everything you hear.
Mm-hmm. He is. He's a man's man. And Elizabeth, I think, looks at him after being dominated by the studio system. Mm-hmm. Hey, well, you know what? This guy can break me out of here. This is what, to me, is amazing. Their humor matches each other. Like, Elizabeth is kind of bawdy. So is Mike Todd. Like, she's kind of raunchy. She's always out for a good time.
That's one of my favorite things about her.
She's so real.
Yeah.
Right?
100%.
They fight a lot, but they're turned on a lot by their fighting. Like, they love that give and take. They are, Shirley MacLaine says they were an ideal pair. They were equal in force of nature. So Mike Todd, married to the most beautiful, he's not threatened by her salty independence. He's like, psh, do what you want. He's kind of proud of her. He likes when she goes on a little sassy.
Yeah.
And she's not, on the opposite end, holding him up for anything.
Yeah.
He is an extrovert. He's a star in his own right.
She doesn't have to baby him.
Well, they're very much on equal footing.
Yeah, he seemed like just utterly confident, but also utterly competent.
And I think that was really important to her.
Yeah.
There's no competition in this. She can relax with him. He also really loves her.
Yeah.
And
it was a love match for sure.
No, he says, I wanted to grow up and marry Elizabeth Taylor. And I did.
Oh, like, no, right?
I know. They elope February in Acapulco. Now, Elizabeth is recovering from a surgery. So she is in a metal brace. Like, it's scandal.
Yeah.
He's twice your age. And she's like, I am in a metal brace at 24.
Is this the back surgery?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Super, super broken.
She has lived 2 adult lives at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, that's true.
And he's hopping around like a 13-year-old. Yeah. Like, age is irrelevant. And like, it was such an irony that she is so young and broken and he is older and just in the prime of it. Let's see. They head to Acapulco. They get married. This is a sweet story. They have a quiet ceremony. It's very simple. And they're at the party that night. And Mike Todd has arranged. They're sitting there having a drink. Fireworks light up the sky. M loves E.
Aww.
E loves M.
You're
no,
make me cry.
No, no, no. Then you should hear Elizabeth Taylor talk. I'm getting chills. And she's like, and then the mountain comes alive, and there are dancers over the mountain in like a staged production, and they're doing a native fertility dance.
Aww.
I know. They marry. They travel all over the world promoting his film Around the World in 80 Days, and as they're promoting, it's always like first class, but they really do take time off. And you watch these home videos, they're riding on donkeys. He's posing her next to statues, you know, on the Appian Way, like at the Acropolis. Like, you're a goddess. Here you are next to these goddesses.
Right. That's great.
Remarkably enough, she comes home pregnant. So that's exciting. So they are going to have one child, Liza Todd. I'm sorry, I'm going to gush about Mike Todd here for a minute because I know you and I, Erica, disagree on this. I think Mike Todd was her true love.
I think
she and Burton got a chance to run their course.
Yeah, yeah. I just think you can have more than one true love.
I agreed.
And I think they have a lot of the same qualities.
God, so let me tell you some just charming AF things about Mike Todd and the way Elizabeth speaks about him. So they're traveling around the world for Around the World in 80 Days. And Mike only speaks English. She says, but no matter where we went, He could always make himself understood. And he continually fascinated her, his curiosity and interest in things and people. They'd arrive in some foreign country, and within 5 minutes, no English, he'd come back. He knows the population, the industry that's getting stuff by, the best restaurants to go to, what the political trend is, who won in the last election, is the public satisfied? Like, she just found it utterly remarkable, his connection with the world. They're both extroverts, and he very much likes the spotlight too. They're both working for it. He's buying her a lot of jewels and paintings. She likes to shop.
That's her thing.
And he really likes putting her in for that.
Sure.
As they're coming back from this trip, they're being interviewed by a reporter talking about, hey, you guys, you know, fight a lot. Tell me about that. And because they're all private and public, but they don't hide it. But they love it.
She's never good at that. Like,
no, but they love the spat and the teasing and the interplay. That's part of their foreplay. So apparently there's a champagne bottle incident, and you should just hear Elizabeth Taylor go off. The person that wrote this story, Hedda Hopper, is a frustrated old biddy who takes her frustrations out on her typewriter. If you believe it, then I even feel more sorry for you. I wish everybody could be as unhappily married as we are. There'd be no wars and no problems in the world.
Wow.
Like, she just, they just loved each other. Yeah. The same reporter later asked her the stupidest question. So Elizabeth, you once said that you have a mind of a child in a woman's body. Do you feel like, you know, you've grown up since then? And she's like, I was 15 when I said that. So let's hope I've grown up, because I sure would be a dumbass if I...
God, I love her.
You can just imagine this reporter, like, I got to find a question that nobody's ever asked her. Ends up just being misogyny AF, and she takes him down.
Yeah.
Like, and she actually says, she's like, I'd be retarded if I was.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm not condoning the use of the word retarded. Well, yeah, different but time,
back then it was different, yeah.
She just smacks him down. And you should see Mike Todd in the middle of this interplay between them. And, you know, Mike Todd just kind of looks over and looks at the reporter like, she can hold her own.
Yeah,
she got you.
Trying to step in, yeah.
And they just chomp off together. It's amazing. Okay, another really fun story. Like, Mike is larger than life.
Yeah.
Larger than life. They still are on this tour. They're meeting royalty. They're always giving a party for every screening. Here's a little charming story. They're in Paris. And one of Mike's acquaintances' friends has just opened a small Chinese restaurant. It holds 36 people. Hey, buddy, I'm going to throw my after party at your... Okay, Mike, that's cool. But it really only holds 36 people. No, not a problem. I'll just invite 36. 110 people show up. The manager of the Chinese restaurant quits on the spot.
Oh.
He's like, fuck no. And the restaurant owner's like, dude, please just go to the back, water down the wonton soup, and cook every noodle we have. Yeah. Like, and Mike Todd is kind of pissed. Like, where's the food for all my people?
Yeah.
He ends up like, I'll be back. Heading down the block, going into an Italian restaurant and picking up 50 pizzas, bringing them back to the Chinese restaurant. Everybody gets fed. They in no way have enough liquor for all of these people. So the restaurant manager hustles up a nightclub up the street, gets every case of champagne that he has, brings it in. Party, good time had by all. End of the night, 3 a.m. Restaurant owner goes up to Mike Todd with the bill.
Oh, my.
Yeah, right.
Like, hey, man, you know.
This is not going to be good.
Like, $700 bill, which I guess for, you know, mid-50s, like late-50s, that's a significant amount.
Yeah, it is.
And Mike's like, oh, man, yeah, it's cool. Just bring it to the hotel at noon tomorrow. And I was like, okay. And Elizabeth goes to kiss the restaurant owner and whispers in his ear, hey, get your money now. We leave the hotel at 8 a.m. So the restaurant owner's like, hey, Mike, you know, we're not Diners Club. We can't really float you here. Like, if you could go ahead and pay up. And Mike Todd, I can't believe you're questioning me and thinking that I really don't like my integrity question. Anyway, he pays the
guy
and off he goes.
I love her for doing that.
I do too. Yeah, I was so, yeah.
Because the restaurant guy, wasn't his fault. He brought more people. That's all.
Yeah, no, but that. Like, yeah, get your money now. We leave at 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. Like, she's cheeky and I love
she's
her.
She's also super genuine. Like, she didn't want to cheat the guy. Like, yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
So they're no holds barred. They have a ton of fun fighting and loving. There's just one picture of them that Elizabeth Taylor says old Italian gestures are better than language. Like, they are two people who are, she looks at him, she just looks at him with adoration.
Yeah.
Like, I think they really were a very true love match. Mm-hmm. They have their daughter. So things are really going great. Mike Todd is in love with his wife. He does win an Oscar for Around the World in 80 Days, and he's interviewed. I'm going to cry again. I got the two biggest prizes you can get, Liz Taylor and an Oscar. Like, this is, yeah. Like, he is a man fulfilled. Liza, when she's born their daughter, has respiratory problems. So she's in an incubator, and something just naturally with the machine makes her lift her arm up. But it's like he's watching her and he's like, she waved at me.
Aww.
This is the smartest, most intelligent child that has ever lived.
My so baby's cute. A genius.
That's no, so and cute. The Liz, his plane goes down in March on the way over. I'm going to not mess up the year on this. 1958. On the way over, he's going to win an award for the Friars Club, maybe in New York. But his, everybody on the plane is done. Elizabeth was supposed to be on the plane and caught cold and was not. She had just started filming Cat on a Hot Tin Roof a few weeks ago. But to me, what a love match. Mike Todd left the world as a man completely fulfilled. The wife of his dreams, the career of his dreams, the most brilliant child that has ever existed.
Genius baby.
On the face of the earth. Like, this guy, you're going to go out.
Yeah.
Go out riding high and on top. Like, it's tragic. But his death is tragic. Elizabeth is distraught.
Yeah.
She cannot get out of bed for weeks. There's a round-the-clock suicide watch.
Right.
And that her friends are holding.
They were married, 2 years, right? Like, it was
13 months. It was very quick. Like,
yeah, that's
married. Baby,
mm-hmm.
Like
terrible.
No, they married February of 58 and he died, or February 57 and he died in March of 58.
Jesus Christ.
1 year. Well, imagine
a lot of life in 1 year.
It is
The life and all the love and all the things in just that period of time.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm sorry, I'm exempting Mike Todd from trash bags.
I was just gonna say zero for me.
Cool.
Like, he's such a good guy.
Mm-hmm. I think
he truly loved her.
He truly loved her.
And they treated each other wonderfully. Yeah. Like, yeah, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, no trash cans. Mike Todd, I love you. But Elizabeth now, right, is in the spotlight of the world as a grievance. The world's heart is breaking for Elizabeth Taylor. Like, young and beautiful and new daughter and the love of your life. Like, look, she'd had two other crap marriages. Now the public's like, wow, they're giving, like, this is the one that's going to stick. Tragedy. She's clinging to Mike's memory. And as you know, we're going to talk about it again. Be careful of the couple friends that you have. Because old Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds, who perhaps had a studio marriage themselves. Yeah. Nobody, I think, bothered to tell Debbie until she figured that out on the back end.
Yeah.
Eddie, who is best friends with Mike Todd, eats like him, dresses like him, talks like him, wants to grow up and be Mike Todd. Eddie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds' son, Todd, is named after Mike Todd. Like, this guy's everything. Wow. And Eddie Fisher steps in to play the world's most dangerous thing to do, which is wiping a widow's tears.
Yeah.
They are both missing him. They are both mournful. It is keeping Mike's memory alive, which is how I think
Husband number four happens. Oh, it's so scandalous.
Yeah, this was.
You know, Eddie's marriage to Debbie is just as much of a sham as Elizabeth was with Nikki. But Debbie really is playing this out. So I guess let's, I don't know. Elizabeth's not hiding that there's an affair going on. So she has gone from world sympathy to,
Homewrecker.
Yeah.
Homewrecker, yeah. Condemned by the Vatican. Like, she's Anne fucking Boleyn.
Was that when she was condemned?
I thought that was Burton. Yeah,
I know. It was Burton. Like, it's all bad.
She gets condemned a couple times.
Yeah. I mean, she's annihilated in the press. And apparently, Eddie Fisher's great in bed. So, yeah, she's been with older men. So he's young and lusty and rowdy. And Eddie Fisher says Elizabeth was the love of his life. Like, she was the source. She was everything. Mm-hmm. Like, she wrecked him, and that's probably good because he wrecked Debbie Reynolds. Yeah, sure. I'm not too worried about that.
Can I share a Carrie Fisher quote about this?
Ooh, oh, yes. Please. I love her.
His daughter, obviously. She said that upon Mike Todd's death, her father rushed to be by Elizabeth Taylor's side and gradually moved to her front.
She's hilarious.
Yes.
I watched a lot of Carrie Fisher.
I hate to interrupt, but have you ever seen her stand-up special? I think it was on HBO. Mm-hmm. She actually does the graph chart of their families.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
6 degrees of how she's
drinking
with Liz Taylor.
Okay, we're going to...
And she's so cool about it. Like, you know, years later, Elizabeth and... oh my God, why do I always lose her name? Debbie. They made up. They made friends. They forgave each other. Everything was fine. So, I mean, I always thought that was really cool.
Well, they never really unloved each other. Like, so Elizabeth does not stay friends with Eddie in the breakup.
He's the one.
Yeah. They didn't talk for 40 years. They did reconcile. I'm getting ahead of the story, but Eddie and Liz reconciled a few years before his death. But Carrie Fisher called Elizabeth when Eddie died, and Elizabeth cries.
Yeah.
Like, she has a genuine sense of family. She loved a good time. She made egg hunts for all the kids. Like, they didn't speak for 40 years, but they figured it out at the end.
He still meant something to her. I mean, she was that kind of person.
He kept Mike alive. Like, they're both absolutely grieving and I guess have hot, rowdy sex. Here's the deal, though. It's just sad. Like, she hooks him. They marry at 27. She converts to Judaism. She's eclipsing Marilyn Monroe at the box office. So she is playing all of this publicity, good and bad, to her advantage. Here's how we're going to get to next one. We're going to wrap this, but this is amazing. She's in the shower one day, and the studio calls, and they really want her to do Cleopatra. And Eddie's like, Liz, come on. Like, and Elizabeth Taylor's like, you know what? I'm going to just give them something they're never going to say yes to so they quit bugging me.
Right.
I want $1 million and 10% of the absolute gross.
Whoa.
Eddie That's Fisher comes back. He's like, you got it.
Whoa.
Like, she made up a number that was so ridiculous.
I have, as you know, I've occasionally quoted exorbitant prices to clients I don't want to work with.
Yeah.
Which usually works, but rare, if they come back with like we need this, then
$1 million and 10% of the absolute gross.
So,
And also $50,000 for every week it went over schedule.
Wow,
did you catch that one?
Yeah,
and it went way over schedule.
Well, so
that is, I mean,
no, they all head over.
Talk about a savvy businesswoman on top of everything else.
Mike Todd taught her a few things, so they all head over to England. Which is naturally where you want to film Cleopatra in the winter in England.
Didn't they steal all these artifacts from Egypt and they're still there?
Well, I think they built a bunch of fake sets, right? And then they moved them.
Yeah.
I didn't mean the production. I mean, didn't England steal a bunch of shit from Egypt and put it in its own museums?
I think they did that already anyway.
They build a whole studio lot out at Pinewood and it's raining. Like, you're never going to substitute sunny summertime Egypt.
No.
And it, like, come on. And so it's bad. The weather's crap. And Elizabeth is getting sicker and sicker. She's being carried into the set. It's super bad. She ends up getting really sick. gets pneumonia, collapses. She's in a coma. She's near death.
What?
There actually was a press release. This is funny to hear her talk about it later, that it was published that she did die. And she's like, they were the best reviews I ever got.
Oh, my God.
She has such a good sense of humor.
Awful. So she's amazing. So pneumonia, this leads her into the hospital where they have to do an emergency tracheotomy.
Sibling fights are unavoidable, but what if every fight you had was under a microscope on a global scale? That's the reality for brothers Prince William and Prince Harry. They were each other's closest friends and allies since the death of their mother, but that all began to crack as they married and took wildly different approaches to their royal duties.
Wondery's podcast, Dis and Tell, is hosted by comedians Sydney Battle and Matt Bellassai. Each episode unpacks one of pop culture's most iconic celebrity feuds, and they recently took a deeper look into the real reason William versus Harry started.
It's actually much bigger than these two brothers, stretching back into the history of the British monarchy. Did their feud start with the royal family's mistreatment of Meghan Markle, or was it something that started much earlier?
Follow Dis and Tell on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. So she has a scar. She's going to live with the scar on her life, on her neck the rest of her life. This scar, oh gosh, ends up winning her. So I'm loved. I'm now the world's saddest widow. Now I'm the world's most hated mistress. Now I'm married to this dude, and I've been through a tragedy and barely escaped with my life. This is the time she gets the Oscar.
Yeah, for Butterfield 8 around.
For a crap. Like, what did Shirley MacLaine say?
She said she lost the Oscar that year to a tracheotomy. I forget what movie she was in that year.
Something probably groundbreaking. And I'm sure. Yeah.
Didn't
I love how Shirley MacLaine's not like shy about saying I earned that. Yeah, right. This is a piece of shit. Yeah.
Well, didn't Taylor hate?
Taylor thought it was a piece of shit too.
Yeah. She hated Butterfield 8. Okay. Like, I remember in the book it says later on she was more affectionate towards it years later, but she hated the filming of it. Like the experience of the filming of it left a bitter taste.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why the Oscar wasn't that big a deal to her.
Right.
So
can you imagine, like, she's been in this industry since she was literally a child, finally gets the top honor, and it's like, I really didn't enjoy this movie at all.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Butterfield 8 put her in a role where she was...
I broke my back in Nashville, Velvet.
She was playing a prostitute. So she thought the studio was really taking advantage of, hey, her like, this is my current instance in life, and you're going to put me in a role where... not cool. So,
slut shamey.
Yeah. Eventually, Elizabeth is on the road to recovery. They finally get smart. Like, it's production is just, like, they've already spent like $30 million or something crazy. And they decide to replace the director and some of the cast. Dun, dun, dun. They head on over to Rome, which is where they should have been filming all along. Yep. In comes the new director, and in walks Welshman Richard Burton.
My man.
So
I love him.
We're gonna get there. Well, I guess we'll wrap up Eddie when they're done. So here comes Richard Burton.
Yeah, that's fair.
Actually, you know what? I don't want to ever have to talk about Eddie Fisher again. So kind of a trashy, she's gonna, at the end of the day, Burton is divorcing his wife and Taylor's divorcing Fisher, and they're destined on a course of love.
On a collision course.
So I don't know how trashy the divorce was per se. I guess I think
he
Eddie
gets more
Fisher
trash
got
cans
what
because
he,
of Debbie.
Yeah.
More than Liz.
That's
really.
It. Like that was trashy.
So how many did you give him in the other episode?
I think we ended up giving Debbie halos.
We gave Debbie halos.
You did. I remember that now.
I don't know if we actually gave trash cans or just gave, because Debbie was so.
Yeah.
She's amazing. Mm-hmm. Like I don't. I mean, their divorce. I mean, they
weren't there. Weren't there photographs though of Burton and Taylor on a yacht in the Mediterranean?
Oh yeah,
they invented the paparazzi. That's how the scandal broke.
But like the divorce was not final.
No.
There was all sorts of weird language coming out of the Vatican describing what sort of terrible, like the State Department threatened to not let her back into the United States. Like it was a huge thing.
Well, she definitely is. She's head over heels for Burton.
Oh, sure.
Fisher at the end of their marriage is pretty much just like a dog poop scooper.
Yeah.
He's picking up after dogs and watching kids.
Yeah.
Fisher did adopt
No, it's like
Liza
he
Todd.
Was, he just seems like he was kind of a small man who got smaller over time. Like, it's very...
That's a really good way of looking at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, Eddie Fisher, it's a very strange story with him. Like,
I don't know. Is the trash can rating, is this the first time karma wipes it out? You got from her what you did to Debbie?
I mean, you know, that's kind of
It's
fair.
Kind of a karmic retribution.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sucks when it happens to you. All right. I'm going to call it a karma wash.
Okay.
Perfect.
We can call that one a wash.
It's our podcast.
We can making
up damn rules. All right. So Richard Burton, this is the longest love of her life. Married two times. The first time, round one, was about 11 years. Round two, another two. They were married a total of 14 years. In a Barbara Walters interview later in life, Elizabeth says they would have been married again by the time it was all over. Their highs were too high. Everything was too much. We loved each other too much. It was so intense, almost abnormal, but great. Like, she even talked about, he charmed dogs, cats, men, women, her too. And she sees something in Richard that reminds her of Mike Todd. She says they were both geniuses.
And he was magnetic. It was just like you're talking
Utterly.
About. Like,
yeah.
Everybody was drawn to him.
Mm-hmm. Utterly.
And he thought he was ugly. He was very self-conscious. He had cystic acne and bad scars from it. And so he was actually a really self-conscious man. And she just made him be like, fuck it. That's not what I see. You're beautiful. I love you. You know what I mean? She made him feel good about himself in a way that he had always been too self-conscious.
That's fascinating.
I think that's one of the things I love about
her. Yeah.
She did that with so many people. You hear
she
about
lifted
her.
Lifted everybody up.
Yeah. Connecting with James Dean on the set of Giant, where he just is kind of seeing through her. And he talks about, like, the bad childhood he had. Like, she finds a way. Like, she defended Michael Jackson to the end of her life because his father...
She was gone before that documentary came out.
I know. But, like, Michael Jackson had an abusive father. Like, she meets Richard Burton on set of Cleopatra. He comes in hung the fuck over. And she helps him with coffee to his lips. And that mothering and caring, like, think about for a kid who probably didn't get a lot of that. You need to be here
at this time.
No, he was
one of 13 children.
No, for her.
Oh, no,
you need to be here at this time. Yeah. You need to be here for makeup. Your mom controls you. Just to have that warmth and nurture.
She got to be the nurturer. Wasn't there brandy in that coffee?
Probably.
I think that, like, she
probably.
Slipped him brandy because that's why.
That is, like, the
thing of their relationship. I mean, they were drinkers. That was a thing. And she completely understood what was going on with his shaking hands and said, I can fix this.
Yeah.
And she did.
And she did. So your book that you recommended, Furious Love, is amazing. The thing with Richard and Elizabeth, like, they fall in love in Cleopatra. Those scenes just sizzle.
Yes.
They are literally falling in love on the set. Everyone is watching it happen. Again, or maybe this is when they were condemned by the Vatican.
Yeah, it is.
Elizabeth Taylor is called out in the Congressional Record in the U.S. Now, there's one small problem with all of this is that Richard Burton has a wife named Sybil.
Hmm.
And Sybil is devoted to him and understands that he is a notorious philanderer.
He is.
And
she's put up with it all along.
This isn't going to be anything different than anything.
Right, than all the others.
I don't know if she felt the way that Debbie Reynolds felt, because Debbie Reynolds is like, if you're going to get left, you get left for Elizabeth Taylor, right? Like, that's the way to go out. I don't know if Sybil felt the same way. So Burton is in this devoted to my wife, in love with the most beautiful woman in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, it took a little while.
Yeah.
But
finally, Sybil had to let go. Like,
yeah.
He tried for a long time, but it was up to her. She refused. I mean, back then, you could just not sign the divorce papers.
Right.
Sure. You know, she finally, I think I remember from the book, when she finally did it was because she fell in love with a 24-year-old rock star. And
good.
She was in her 30s.
Good for her.
And I mean, that's what Liz and Dick both said, was like, you know what? Great. He admitted to being a little bit jealous at first because the guy was younger.
Mm-hmm.
But then he was like, you know what? Good for her. She deserves that.
Yeah.
Good.
Everybody's getting what they want.
Mm-hmm. Can I throw in my Brangelina?
Oh my God, totally.
So she's been compared, or Angelina Jolie's been compared to her, let's put it that way.
Sure.
Twice.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, in the Eddie Fisher scandal, whereas Debbie Reynolds would be Jennifer Aniston and Eddie Fisher is Brad
Pitt. Of course.
Right.
And then again, with Liz and Dick, La Scandale, they actually invented the paparazzi. That's when that happened. Mm-hmm. When that picture hit is like that picture on the beach of Brad and Angelina.
Yep.
So that, you know, she's been compared both times that way. And I think that's super interesting because that's really the only other couple I can think of that's ever been that followed. They were followed like the Beatles. They were mobbed places. Like, she got mobbed at an airport one time and they were pulling at her hair.
Oh my God.
Got her purse. She lost her shoes. Like, she would actually be in danger when they went out together. That's insane.
No, they were the most famous. Like, mm-hmm. there was not anything paralleled to.
But she always did try to have a good attitude about it. Because mm-hmm. when I said that about the Beatles, she was like, well, it could be worse. We could be the Beatles. And he's like, we are the fucking Beatles. Like, this is bad.
You know? Most famous couple. They marry while he's in the longest running Hamlet. He's an alcoholic. He's plagued by self-doubt. Like, I don't know. They're in love. It's got to be hot. It's got to be heavy. And the book Furious Love talks about this. There's the Liz and Dick tabloid.
Mm-hmm.
We're the Beatles. I mean, they did hang out with Wallace Simpson and Edward.
They did.
Like, that's the...
Yeah.
They were
the only people in their social tier. I mean,
right.
They actually couldn't go back down to regular actors, if that makes sense, because of their level of fame. They did hang out with the aristocracy and, you know, like, aristocracy.
Something funny.
That word
Elizabeth
really
Taylor in a later interview. So I'm all jumping all over this story, but welcome to Trashy Divorcism. Elizabeth's talking to, I was talking to my friend Grace Kelly, and we were both turning 40 that year and really talking about, like, what does that mean? And are we going to freak out about this? And they decided together, me and my friend Grace Kelly, just to be fearless about it. And Grace threw a party in Monte Carlo. Elizabeth threw hers in Budapest. They went to each other's parties. Mm-hmm. Like, these are the
amazing
friends.
These
are your
too.
Close friends.
Yeah. Sure.
That's, you don't have regular friends.
No. I mean, if you try to be friends with someone in the mm-mm. industry who's not a, that, all well, that, and, all that person is going to have in the back of their head is like, can this help my career? Like,
well, exactly. It has to be a level of trust.
Yeah.
And that's why they had to be around equals. And their only equals were people like Grace Kelly.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, somebody's out for something.
Yeah. Rarified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really am hopping around. Elizabeth sees Richard Burton. Richard Burton lands in Hollywood in the early 50s.
Oh, I love that
And the
story.
First time. And like, they meet again in 62 on Cleopatra, but they meet again originally in the early 50s at a pool party. And there's Elizabeth and her 18-year-old hot bod, big sunglasses. And here in comes Richard Burton. And she distinctly thinks, like, I will not be another notch in his belt. She is unimpressed. So she finds out he's coming to play the new Mark Antony. She's like, oh, you have got to be kidding me.
Famous last
like,
words.
Yeah, like, I met him 10 years ago. He was an jerk then. Yeah. He wasn't impressive, but...
Yeah, you know what happens to people over a decade?
Do you remember what he said about her, though? I love that. Because she was sitting by the pool reading a book and, like, not actually partying or whatever. She kind of glances at him and then looks away. He said he burst out laughing because she was so beautiful.
Yeah.
And aww, I just thought that's, like, the sweetest
thing
ever.
That is sweet.
But you know who else said that about her? Roddy McDowell, one of our lifelong friends.
Yeah.
He said the same thing, that the first time he ever met her, she was so beautiful, he just burst out laughing. She was one of these people that, she was beautiful on film, but everybody that knew her in real life said to be around her was amazing. Like, she was even more beautiful without makeup on, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Sorry, I probably messed you up there.
No, I'm all over the place. So they're married. He divorces Sybil. She divorces Eddie. They marry. Their first run goes a good decade plus. They are living with blended families. So they both have careers. They're doing films together. They make a total of 11 films together. They buy a yacht because they're too famous to live on land. So dueling careers.
Also a little bit of tax evasion.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
She would actually have to put in a contract that I can't stay in England, and he'd have to do the same, because if I stay here this long, I'll owe the government £2 million or something.
Days per year. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, I mean, it is kind of smart if you're going to be a tax evader.
Live on a yacht on the Thames.
I mean, I'd rather live on a yacht anyway. So, yeah.
Well, and that was paparazzi. Like, whoa, poor them. So they're really Richard and Elizabeth trying to have a marriage to people who are really, like, there's something about him that's very Mike Todd. Mm-hmm. He's in control. He's larger than life. He's charismatic.
Mm-hmm. Man's man.
He has his own star power enough, and he doesn't. He tells her no.
Yeah.
She's looking like she has been in control over everything as long as she's been alive. Dominic Dunn will say, Elizabeth told him, like, I don't remember a time where I wasn't famous. So I think anybody that presented that real to her,
right,
like, I'm going to talk to you like a real, like, mm-hmm. you're not a star. They love to fight. And here's a fun thing from an interview later. They love to fight. And you can, this just baffles me. This actor and this actress, I think, legitimately plan and script their battles. Mm-hmm. Because they're very tender in this interview. Like, but we don't attack the weak points. Burton says, I could attack her double chin. Elizabeth's like, I could attack your pockmarks mm-hmm. on your face. You don't go don't for the it. Easy stuff. You don't, you...
Well, their fighting was foreplay. That's yeah. Let's be honest about what that is.
That's exactly like,
the book
it.
Keeps calling it fighting and then lovemaking.
Oh, sure.
Because it's proper. It was fighting and fucking. Yeah. This is what they were yeah. doing. And I mean, it's hot. They were hot.
But through these 11 films, I think they continue to kind of recreate that spark of Cleopatra. Mm-hmm. Like especially like Taming of the Shrew.
Oh, yeah.
That was H.O.T.
Well, and the other thing though, I mean. 11 felt like they clearly enjoyed
working they liked working together. They preferred yeah. to work together.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty amazing. Mm-hmm.
They divorce, wait on it, they're going to work together again mm-hmm. after they divorce. So the next Oscar she won, like this to me was exciting, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Because they are falling into their own alcoholic torment.
They always say that's very indicative of their marriage, the way it was towards the end. And, you know, she aged herself up. And
So she's 33 that, and playing a 55-year-old. Yeah. She gained 25 pounds. And she looks 50. Like, it was...
Yeah, yeah. And for the time and the makeup, yeah.
Whoever, like, all, you hear about Hollywood, and, oh, they lost so and so many pounds to Trent...
She put it on.
She started
this
that
This is Mike
shit.
Nichols' first movie, too.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they gave it. They had choice of, in their contracts. Oh, I want to talk about that, too, with her contracts. Mm-hmm. In her contract, she always had choice of director, and this was his first film. So they basically just gave the kid a shot. But also, in her contracts, she did not work on the days that she had her period. I fucking love her.
Yeah.
She put that into writer? Her contract that I don't work when I'm on my period.
That's
great. Yes, ma'am, sir. I love her so much.
Like, well, also, I mean, if you're working in front of a camera, you're a little bloated.
You feel like shit. Yep. Like, I mean, I don't blame her. If you're the most beautiful, sought-after actress in the world that can command $1 million a movie, are they going to say no?
Yeah. No, but don't you see, like, when you're on your cycle, your face change a little bit?
Yeah, 100%.
That's why she looked.
Well, and if there's one thing Elizabeth understood, she has a weird dichotomy. Is like, she understood how beautiful she was, but she was not vain. But right. she also considered herself a caretaker of her looks. Mm-hmm. So she was not going to go on camera knowing that she didn't look her best.
Well, in continuity in film,
100%.
I can't have you look weird one day. Like, that's the thing. She lost a crap ton of weight after Mike Todd died. And 3 weeks in mourning, she has to get back to film Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And she comes back and she is noticeably thinner. And there's a particular scene where she has to eat. And the director just kept doing takes on purpose.
To get her to eat.
To get her enough food. Sad. Devastation.
I know.
Okay. So, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf wins Elizabeth her second Best Actress Oscar.
But he lost.
He lost. But now she feels strong enough to tackle Shakespeare and Taming of the Shrew. This point also, she's released from MGM and can start making her own deals. And now they really start having fun. Mm-hmm. Spending millions, furs, yachts, jewelry. There is no limit spending.
She's in her mid-30s.
Mm-hmm. And she's early 30s.
MGM has owned her since she was 8.
Pretty much.
10. That is, so 25 years of her life.
Yeah.
My God.
No limit to spending. Somebody is quoted, it is pathological the way that Burton goes after available jewels for Elizabeth.
I love that.
So if there's a big diamond, a big jewel on the market coming up for auction, Burton is there. It's said that Rubes.
No, I'm laughing about one of my favorite stories of the jewels.
Tell me.
The most expensive jewel he had to buy her was after a fight where he just said something nasty. He turned around and said, get your big, ugly man hands away from me. And she's like, really? Oh, really? And to make him make up for this, he bought her the most expensive diamond in the world. Cartier actually outbid him and got it. And then he was like, hell no. Hell no. Got his lawyer over there and kept bidding with Cartier until he got that fucking diamond.
Oh, my God.
And it was so big and so heavy, she couldn't wear it on her man hands. Like, that was the joke. So she had it remade into a necklace, and it had to be insured for $1 million. She was only allowed to wear it 30 days out of the year and had to have armed guards when she did it.
You were joking.
Not joking at all. Like,
holy cats.
I don't know where it is now. I'm sure it's in some crazy museum. But Cartier had it on display for a long time. You could come and see it. And it known for, I forgot what the first name was. And then it was the Cartier diamond because they bought it. And then it became known as the Taylor Burton. And when he bought it, he finally got it back for $1.1 million. And they say, I think it's like $2.5 now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
There,
yeah, he would fuck up and have to buy her.
I love it.
Just piece of jewelry. I do too.
Bought her art. Bought her jewelry.
Every time somebody messes up.
When after Elizabeth Taylor passes away, her family, I guess, has her collection of jewels and dresses and shoes and bags. It was a fascinating little film that the auction house put together.
Because Sotheby did it, right?
Yeah, 3,000 bags all lined up. I was fine with the jewels. I was fine with the dresses. And then they got to the handbag lady and I... Okay. By the end of the 60s, he is drinking a lot. Both of them. It's a lot of weakness. It's a lot of self-destruction. She is taking a lot of painkillers for her back injury. Her star power hasn't passed, but the times are changing. She's very much still connected to old studio Hollywood. And, you know, we're looking at The Graduate. Like, innovative filmmakers are making new things.
Well, and the idea of women's beauty was changing. Twiggy became a thing.
Yep.
Now you needed to be tall, slim, and willowy. And that was the complete opposite of 5'2", curvy Liz Taylor. Like, that's just not who she was. So. Yeah.
So, the drinking, teenagers,
the drinking careers. Is insane. Can we talk about the drinking for a
minute? Let's talk about
because
the drinking.
Because she could keep up with any men and actually drink them under the table.
Isn't that amazing?
She started young, obviously, yeah. But that was part of the problem with them and part of their love, actually, is a shared interest in not just drinking, but having fun and partying and adventuring and all of that. But the drinking was
while
crazy.
Drinking.
And they could do it all freaking day long. They would bring a Bloody Mary, a pitcher of Bloody Marys to set in the morning. And they're like, you better get your best shit from them before lunch. Because after lunch, you know, they start with the martinis. So, and I mean, that's just how they worked. And if you wanted to work with them, you worked around it. But yeah, she could actually, at one point, I mean, that's when he got sick. She was so worried about him. She knew something was wrong and his color was wrong. And he was told he would probably die within 5 years if he didn't quit drinking.
Oh, wow.
His liver was so enlarged. And so he had to become sober, and she wouldn't.
Oh.
She didn't have to, and so she didn't. And so he started seeing, like, the ugly side of himself now that he was sober and her. And I think that had a lot to do with
the
downward spiral, is that he had to get sober, and she never would.
So they did downward spiral. Mm-hmm. I think they were right-headed for divorce, or they got together after their divorce to talk about money or something.
Yeah, they did. They got together to work out finances and wound up crying and having sex and getting back together.
Getting back together.
They loved each other. That was the thing that was never the problem.
Yeah.
You know, they did never fall out of love.
No. And they didn't. Mm-mm. They were something. So they, second time around, didn't last anywhere near as long as the first time around. It was much more short-lived.
They were immediately fighting again. Oh, I guess we should talk about why the first one happened.
Yeah.
He did actually cheat on her. He had never cheated on her, even though he was a famous Lothario. Had always cheated on Sybil. Never, ever cheated on her. He did a movie called Blackbeard, where he has all these sexy wives. Remember she smacks one of them? I can't think of she was like a Playboy model turned actress. And she thought she was a little bit too enthusiastic in her love scenes with Richard. So she gave her a resounding slap.
Jane Mansfield?
No, it wasn't Jane Mansfield. No. It wasn't like a name that you would know.
Okay.
It was just a somebody that Elizabeth was like, no, and smacked her. But he was, I mean, it's Bluebeard. So, you know, his thing about it in the movie is he's this Count hell, I forgot what the name was. But anyway, he's actually impotent. And so when his wife would find out, he would kill her and put her in a freezer. So that's why he was a serial killer of wives.
Oh my God.
He's on screen with his all this bevy of beautiful women. And it is like Raquel Welch and like all these incredible beauties. But it's not one of those that you would think that she would be so jealous of. It's this one chick. And it's something she watched because, you know, he had it in his contract that she could come to the set whenever she wanted. She watched it and she slapped the shit out of that girl.
Was that the one he cheated with?
I don't remember. I wish I had gone back and listened to that again or written it down. But he did eventually, you know, they were really fighting and things were bad. And I think it was at like the rap party or something. They walked around a corner and everybody thought they were coming back. And then it was like, oh, well, I guess they're not.
Gave in to his darker demons.
Yeah, and I mean, she didn't just find out about it. He told her. Like, I mean, he told her the truth. I mean, that's who they were, though. I mean,
that's good.
Yeah.
I mean, not good that she did it, but not let's not lie about it.
Not good that
she
cheated, but I, in a way, think he was hurting so badly, and he had quit drinking, and she hadn't, and I think he felt a little bit let down and betrayed, because she's the one that forced him to go to the doctor and get his shit under control, and yet he was watching her spin out of control with her drinking. Yeah. She was also taking painkillers and you know, not living right, and he was starting to see it for what it was in a way that he couldn't when he was drinking.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that she deserved to be cheated on. I'm just saying I can see how it led to that.
Certainly.
So,
well, anyway, that, I guess that was her last straw.
That's how the first divorce started.
Okay.
He finally cheated. So.
Well, you know, if that's your line in the sand.
It's my line in the sand.
Yeah.
For sure.
Guess it was Elizabeth's as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's the first breakup, the remarriage it's just sad.
Yeah, it's like lasted a year,
but
right?
They never really stopped loving each other.
No, they stayed friends.
And we're going to have a little Burton interlude coming back up. But this
first
ends Richard Burton. And I don't, I, let's.
I'm going to have a hard time with his trash cans. I just love him. I think he was at heart a really good man. Very mercurial man. He's got to have a trash can or two for Sybil.
I'm gonna hold on for trash can until I get to my, he reenters the picture.
That's fair.
Let's hold off for a second.
Till the interlude.
So Elizabeth is now single, living large, free of...
But not for long.
What happened, Stacey?
Not for long at all. Elizabeth Taylor, actually, I didn't even include this in the story, but it's worth noting that world history could have been vastly different, because for a brief period right after Burton, she dated the Iranian ambassador to the United States, and they
You're
were
kidding.
Seen out and about, and he was apparently dashing.
Who Grace Kelly introduced her to.
Really?
No way.
Yes. Richard bitched about it later that he had to sit through a car ride in traffic with Elizabeth and Grace Kelly, and that all Grace Kelly did the whole time was talk about how wonderful the Iranian guy is.
Yeah.
So,
my gosh.
And, I'm reading this, and I'm like, holy shit. Like, so it was before the Iranian Revolution, so the Shah was still in charge.
Yeah.
And he apparently put the kibosh on that, because I'm sure it looked decadent as fuck to the public at home. But imagine, like, Elizabeth Taylor marries the Iranian ambassador to the United States. Maybe it works. And I don't know, maybe world history is really different and the United States and Iran are not what they are today.
Wow, sliding doors.
Yeah, right?
Sure.
Anyway, so that didn't happen. Anyway, because his boss was like, cut it
out.
Yeah,
no,
like,
sure.
No more of this. So she is left in the lurch ahead of a British embassy ball in honor of Queen Elizabeth II. I think this is part of America's bicentennial celebrations.
Oh, yeah.
The British needed to have a little party for the Queen.
Make her feel better.
Soothe the wounds. July 8th, 1976. Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
So she is set up on a blind date with an extremely eligible bachelor. He has recently divorced the heiress of the Mellon fortune.
Okay.
So he's worth $10 million.
Nice.
Like the Carnegie Mellons?
Yes.
Okay.
Those ones.
Wow.
She was Catherine Mellon. And apparently after the divorce, John Warner is her ex-husband. After the divorce, they got on famously and she lived next door. They had three kids together. So like it worked out really well.
Oh. So Elizabeth has a date with who?
John Warner.
Ha.
Who had been the Secretary of the Navy under Nixon, and Ford had put him in charge of like the bicentennial stuff. So he probably had some official role, or he was like almost like at a diplomat level for this ball would be my guess. So it's a blind date. you know, he's a rich, silver-haired guy thinking about a career in politics.
Who managed not to get swept up by the corrupt Nixon administration, so he's probably smarter than your average bear. Yeah.
Is that true, though? I don't know.
I've not heard... I don't know.
Well, no, right. I haven't heard of him being implicated, but was there anyone who wasn't?
Anyway. Maybe.
I mean, yeah. You got some of his stank on you, even if you didn't do anything.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. So he was just, he was considered a super great catch. He had previously dated Barbara Walters and most of the other eligible bacheloresses of D.C.
Why not? Sure.
He said to Barbara Walters, "A woman like you could probably get me elected senator." Totally charming. That did not work out, weirdly. Turns out, you know, Elizabeth Taylor was pretty tired of Hollywood at that point. She'd been living on a fucking boat for like 15 years with Burton. She sees this dude, you know, older man, silver-haired even then.
Well, and he has 2,800 acres and a horse farm, which is her.
He's got this giant Virginia farm about an hour outside of D.C. It is at the end of a mile-long driveway. Yeah, there are duck ponds. There's cattle. There's like, yeah, it was like her childhood.
But you can also hide out. It's like Jackie Kennedy when she marries Ari Onassis. Mm-hmm. I can get on a boat and be away from everyone in the world. And doesn't that have to feel good?
Oh, yeah.
I saw a biographer wrote that she married John Warner for roots. You know, like she married Burton for love. She, you know.
All of her husbands, she had an interesting reason.
Yeah.
I mean, except for Nikki, which she was pushed into. But I mean, the rest of them were almost, they're almost reactionary to each other. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, they were married 5 months after their first date, December 4, 1776. Simple Episcopalian ceremony conducted at sunset on his farm. Like half a dozen people were there. It was just super
That's
small.
Sweet. Yeah.
She said, "I'm so happy to just be John's wife. I finally feel that I have a home. My search for roots is finally over." John called her his little heifer, which I guess is maybe different if you're a cattle rancher. And pooters. So already I'm thinking maybe they're not quite on the same level.
I will interject and say that Richard Burton liked to, he would call her lumpy something. I mean, like, he would do it in a joking, loving way.
Right.
Now,
I think
heifers kind of meaner, but we don't know their context. Right. Maybe that was a fun joke between them.
Oh, no.
She had a great sense of humor.
We do know their context.
We
because,
do.
Because, yeah, Barbara Walters interviewed Elizabeth and John Warner in 78.
Did she disclose that they had dated? How awkward.
No, I don't think she did.
Oh, in 78 when he's running for Senate.
In 78, she interviews them at their kitchen table in the farmhouse. Barbara Walters also in the same thing puts together her 88 interview with Elizabeth Taylor, who's now single.
Yeah.
And so it is a dramatic difference. Like, to me, Elizabeth is nursing the wounds of Burton.
Yeah.
She's hiding out on a farm. She is letting herself eat. For the first time in her life.
I know.
So she has gained some weight.
She's learning how to cook.
She's learning how to cook. She's eating. Like, I'm not in a film. I don't have to.
And she got shit for every pound she ever put on.
Oh, my
like,
God.
She was so scrutinized. Yeah. It was unfair.
No, so in this interview, like, Barbara's like, "What would you, you know, tell each other about each?" And he's like, "Yeah, Elizabeth, you're fat." Yeah.
And okay, no, the heifer's not
so
funny.
No, it's not funny at all. So the 88 interview, because Elizabeth in this interview was like, "Oh, I'm so happy. I'm just so happy to be John's wife." And he's like, it was one thing for Mike Todd and Richard Burton to counter with her. You never go for the soft spot.
No, and when Richard did it, he was being funny about it. Like, he was still loving
it.
He was being loving, not...
John Warner just sounds like an asshole.
He's a dick.
He sounds just like a jerk. Well, like, "No, Elizabeth, you're fat." So you listen to her in 88, and she's like, "Yeah, I was miserable. I was miserably unhappy. I was over... Like, everything was bad, but I put on this..."
Right.
I think she's just trying to feel better after Burton.
Yeah, well, and she's such a loving... I think in some ways he became her project. Because
maybe.
He had this ambition, right? Like, he was kind of out of government, but... Let me continue. So he jumps into the 78 Virginia Senate race. Elizabeth turns out to be a hell of a campaign asset.
Of course,
yeah, yeah. I mean, she is part of his stump speech. Like, he will point to her, like, big deal. She's super loyal. At a Georgetown dinner party, she saw the editor of the Washington Post, Ben Bradley, and just beelines for him and is like, "Bradley, get off Warner's ass." Was just... having none of it. Like, she was gonna again, happy, not happy, didn't matter. She was married to him and she was going to fucking be there.
She was loyal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here, this is the craziest campaign story that I think I've recently heard.
Okay.
So Warner was fairly moderate. Like, he was really, the burning issue of the time was the Cold War. He was really into negotiating with the Soviets. He had worked on previous negotiating things with the Soviets. That was not a super popular stance in the GOP at the time. So he's in this Virginia Senate primary for the Republicans, and he ends up finishing second place behind Richard Obenshain, who's just a super anti-communist fire breather. Like, I'm sure he would have gone on to be a prototype of today's Republican.
Yeah.
So, you know, that would have been it for Warner's Senate run, except that 2 months later, Obenshain is killed in a plane crash, which, if you're Liz Taylor, must be like...
There's a lot of plane crashes in her life.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, yeah, so the Virginia GOP, like, holds, I guess, a, like, quickie convention to fix this, and Warner gets put on the ballot. And he ends up being in the Senate for the next 30 years. He didn't retire until 2009. Their marriage...
So he didn't win his race. Well, I mean, he did win his race after the race was...
He won the general. He didn't win the primary. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But, I mean, the guy died, so, you know, party had to do something. They'd put somebody on that ballot.
Yeah.
So Elizabeth, you know, he's in the Senate now. She's living on the farm. She is shopping at the local Safeway. Like, again, this is like a little small town outside, an hour outside of town. She's having guests over. She is learning to cook. She's just doing a lot, like, domestic housewife type things. And, you know, as noted, she was apparently deeply miserable, even if she was trying to put a brave face on it. Hubby is working, like, from...
He's a senator, yeah.
Yeah, and he's got an hour commute, and the whole thing... I mean, he is up before dawn. He is home after dark, like... And so at one point, he was quoted as saying, like, so I get home from work, I am dead tired. And Elizabeth just wants to spend time together. So she's like, we're watching one of my movies. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm watching one of her movies, and I'm seeing all of them over time. Like, it's cool.
How weird must it have been to watch the ones with Richard?
Don't know if they got that far.
A little bit awkward, maybe?
Yeah.
I mean, she had how many movies over her career?
Oh, 50 or something?
Something like that, because she was already in, like, I remember in one of her movies with Burton, they said this was her 42nd film, and I was like, Jesus fuck. Like,
yeah.
Since she was 8, literally never stopped.
True. By 82, they divorced. And upon her death in 2011, Warner told the Washington Post that his kids had remained close to her kids, like, the whole time. So the kids, not Warner, but his kids would be attending her funeral.
Oh. Well, family meant everything to her, including stepchildren. Right. So I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to interlude here with some more Burton?
No. So they divorced. How many... I'm sorry. You don't...
Oh.
You don't hit the weak points of your spouse. That's not what marriage is about.
It's true. And honestly, this...
It's like he needed to knock her down a notch or something.
Oh, I'm sure.
But,
I'm
like, don't knock her down in a mean way. Like, there's something to being countered with.
Body-shaming women is just, like, age-old
bad news
bullshit. But,
I mean, guess you didn't punch her in the...
cheating or abusive.
Not that I know of, yeah. I mean, the other, like, a subplot that I don't think was... She ends up checking into Betty Ford for the first time in December of 83. So clearly her drinking and pill use was escalating over this period. And she was probably frequently alone in a big farmhouse with nothing to do except drink and take pills.
As
like, I'm just guessing. But yeah, so it seems, I don't know, like maybe three. Again, like it didn't seem like he was physically abusive. It didn't seem like there was cheating. Yeah.
I don't think it was a love match.
Can I go ahead and go 3.5 just for the you're fat, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Because that just makes me angry.
Yeah.
So they divorced in 82. In 1983, there's a little bit of a reunion between Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. They go on a 7-month stage tour doing Noel Coward's Private Lives. Mm-hmm. They are together. It's a play about bickering lovers. And I think in this, in this 7-month period, they're still testing it. They're still flirting with that thing that they have. She talks about even after they were divorced, if they were ever to party, they were still flirting under the table.
Drawn to each other. Yeah.
So at the end of this 7-month tour, this is Elizabeth Taylor's first entree. Her family has an intervention for her. Like, they didn't call it an intervention, but she walks in. There's everybody like, hey, we're really worried about you. You are, you know, you've been on this tour. You're drinking mm-hmm. yourself to death. You're pilling yourself to death. And she actually listened in this intervention and gets herself into Betty Ford. She gets herself into the Betty. This is instant headlines.
Right. It's the first time a celebrity had mm-hmm. sort of acknowledged that.
She just recalls. Love her.
Mm-hmm. Don't you just, I'm yeah. going to start crying oh, again, y'all.
Yeah.
She recalls later
no
how.
No shame. She had no shame about
not
it.
Not at all.
I love her.
No. She recalls later how proud she was that she did it and thinking, like, if other people look at that and go, hey, if Elizabeth Taylor can do it, I can do it too.
Yeah.
100%.
So she goes in. It's the first time in her life that she is sharing a bedroom. She's sweeping floors. So you look at part of learning how to cook with John Warner. She's doing ordinary things. Mm-hmm. Anthony Geary from General Hospital. I don't know if you remember when she came on as Helena Cassadine.
Oh, my God. I totally forgot about that.
Okay. In General Hospital, which was amazeballs in like 1981. Anthony Geary and she, I think, had a little affairette. But he talks about taking her to the arcades one day and playing pinball. She had never played pinball. Like, this is a woman now in her late early
50s. She's traveled the world, had every adventure, but she's not done little normal things
but she's never
that anybody
been,
else would have done.
Gone bowling or...
Yeah. Never played a game of skee ball. Never played... Like, they went to the arcade and she... And he talks about just
whack-a-mole.
The joy that...
Like, she's like a little kid.
I can't even believe I've missed out on all of this. Anyway, like, she's back at the Betty, sharing a bedroom... moving out trash cans. Like, this really does have an impact. She examines her life, her addiction, her choices. So she is sober and doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
Doing pretty good. So I'm going to go back to your book, Furious Love. So even though this is not an authorized book, so to speak, Elizabeth Taylor didn't want their love affair not being recorded somewhere. So in the...
And they did them right.
Oh, my God. In the opening of the book, mm-hmm. in the, like, preface, it talks about the last letter. Mm-hmm. The last letter of the 40 letters that Elizabeth gave the authors to tell the story, the last letter is not in there. But I did catch an interview with the authors who say what's in the last letter.
Tell me.
Okay. They've done the Noel Coward's Private Lives. Elizabeth is sober. By 83,
he had remarried, right?
He had remarried.
That's a whole sad thing when he dies because he won't allow, or that wife would not allow Liz to come to his funeral, which
that's
is
it.
Really
oh,
fucking mean.
Oh
my
God.
Opinion.
That,
I mean, it's Liz Taylor, first of all. Everybody knows. Like, it's just shitty.
So Richard Burton tells his brother 2 months before he dies about Elizabeth, that bloody woman. I still love her, and I know I will end up marrying her again. Like, Richard, even though he's married again, is still in love with Elizabeth. So, 1984, that last letter, oh my God, that he sends her, she doesn't receive until after his death.
She gets it a few days after.
She gets it a few days after his death.
I think she comes home from the memorial in the U.S. and the letters in the mailbox.
Which, not allowed to attend the funeral. He writes to her in this last letter, my home is where you are, and I want to come home.
Oh, God. I just love them. You see why I argue that he is her greatest love? Like, I think you can have more than one love of your life, especially if the first one died. It's not like that love died.
Yeah, dying after 13 months.
I think
months.
She got lucky and mm-hmm. got hit by lightning twice. I love their love story. That's
my home
just beautiful.
Is where you are, and I want to come home. So she has always said, like,
damn it.
I know. Mm. We would have welcome. People like when you cry, Erica.
I know. That got me. Yeah.
But I want to come home. So she gets this letter after he passes away, which certainly tests her sobriety. I mean, this crushes her.
Because that's young. 58?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even then, that's young.
That same time, Elizabeth's very good friend, Rock Hudson, is also dying of AIDS. And Elizabeth is...
Did you say how Richard Burton died?
Was it cirrhosis? No. He had a brain aneurysm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Like in his sleep.
Dead at 58.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
It does
very
suck.
Very much.
So Elizabeth's in grief. And I think she turned this grief, watching Rock Hudson die, into... Rock Hudson dies in 85, and it activates her into something. And she can remember, like, going and visiting hospitals and seeing high society women and their dogs walk around AIDS patients. Like, they were going to catch AIDS. And she just got, she got so mad about this. And she walked into the hospital, and she's like, what do I do? And an AIDS patient there was like, I just want to feel someone's arms around me. Because it was that. So Elizabeth sort of spends the rest of her life, mm-hmm. like occasionally popping in for a few acting roles, but doing fundraising for the cause that...
Right.
And trying to make people understand what the disease was and that you couldn't catch it like that. And
that's exactly right.
To normalize it and to humanize it. Yeah. And she was an incredible ambassador for that.
Millions and millions of dollars, but we're not done. We still have one more husband.
We're
now
not.
That I've made
God
everybody cry.
I know. Thanks, Alicia, for the Burton interlude. Jesus.
Well, I can't be the only one that cries on trashy divorces. No, like,
no. Oh, I knew I would. I love them.
Okay, so in the late 80s, she is doing very difficult, very emotionally taxing work. She has suffered significant deaths in her life. She relapses and heads back to the Betty Ford.
Oh, the Betty.
So here she meets a construction worker named Larry Fortensky, who was also battling his own addiction. He had been busted for DUI the year before in California, while also in possession of marijuana, which at the time was not cool. So fortunately, he had Teamster health insurance. Yay, unions.
Fantastic.
And they paid for him to go to Betty Ford.
Oh, great.
Yeah, because that's not cheap.
It's not cheap. And I mean, I guess you don't think about like regular people at Betty Ford because it's so associated with like celebrity, you know, getting clean. So when they both got out, they really, their courtship took off. And Elizabeth would bring treats to him at his work sites, which must have been completely bonkers.
Oh my God. For, like, he's on a construction site. And
but she also
here's some
had
cookies.
This thing where she always endeared her crew to her. So I'm sure she saw it like that. She was the person that knew everybody's name on the movie set, like that brought in booze for everybody or cookies for everybody. Like, so that would have been within her wheelhouse to be like, I don't care.
Sure.
I'm going to show up and
Here's
some brownies for the guys.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's amazing. Okay. So in 91, they married at Michael Jackson's Neverland Ranch in a ceremony officiated by Marianne Williamson.
Really?
I think she's running for president right
she
now.
She is.
Okay.
That is true.
One of the zillions of people who are running for
president. Wow.
We are running for president now. Let's just declare here.
Okay. Big news on trashy divorces.
Taylor wore a $25,000 Valentino dress.
Of course she did.
The guest list included Liza Minnelli, Nancy Reagan, Merv Griffin, Pia Zadora, Macaulay Culkin, and everybody else in Hollywood. There were paparazzi buzzing overhead in helicopters. Like, it was bonkers. They did sell the photographs of the... And this is something she did.
I was
going
to say, I remember vividly the marriage photographs.
Yeah. Right, but all of the... Whatever it sold for, they went to her AIDS charity.
Ampar. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so they had a prenup, and it stipulated that if the marriage lasted 5 years or longer, Fortensky would get $1 million payout. No additional support, but just a clean payout. And so 5 years in...
I'm going to interrupt just for one second.
Yeah, please do.
So in 1992, when Elizabeth turned 60, when we talk about never playing pinball, learning to cook, taking out the trash, she went to Disneyland for the first time at 60 and had her 60th birthday party at Disney.
That's so cute.
That just, really is cute.
Like, I want to be a kid. So she talks about it with, you know, Grace Kelly back in the 40s. And now it was another, that same interview, like, Grace is gone. And, you know, we wanted to embrace aging fearlessly back then. And now I want to go and enjoy all the childlike things that I missed out on in the first place. So it's a good place to turn 60.
Grace Kelly is another one. She literally was surrounded by death, and not just like cancer or unfortunate things, but horrific car crashes and plane crashes. Yep. And it's really kind of sad.
It's sad. Grace Kelly. Beautiful. Okay, sorry, please.
Oh, yeah.
Back to you, Stacey.
Nope, A-okay. So, yeah, by 96, 5 years in, he apparently just, like, according to his sister or something, he was just tired of being Mr. Elizabeth Taylor.
Yep, that's a hard role.
It also sounds like he was not tightly clinging to his sobriety.
Oh.
Oh, well, yeah.
Which, I don't know, given, like, her real penchant for loyalty and supporting. Like, I don't know if that would have been a big deal to her. Like, maybe she would have supported him through that. But in any case, they divorced very amicably, as far as I can tell, and they remained fairly close for the rest of her life. But he was using drugs again, drinking again. He gets arrested for, like, public intoxication later in 96. In 99, he falls down a flight of stairs in his home, causing a serious brain injury from which, like, he recovered, but he was never able to work again. Right. Like, it was, yeah, it was a permanent injury. And he had been drunk at the time of the fall.
Oh, no.
So, you know, Taylor was there for him and helped him out financially when needed. She loaned him $50,000 at one point when he was, like, behind on his mortgage. At her death, in her will, she left him $800,000. The month after she died, though, he moved in with his sister, where he remained until his death from surgical complications in 2016.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
He was 64.
She was super generous, and actually so was Richard. That was one of their things, is, like, they literally supported everybody. I'm talking not just their own children, but nieces, nephews, cousins. You know, if anybody in the family came to them, they were literally supporting everybody on both sides.
Well,
she was just that generous.
Like, her foundation is still allowing some of that support and entree. There's a great video with her grandkids.
Oh,
like, you don't, her kids are pretty hidden. They're there's not much out there about them, but there is a video with all the grandkids. That there's one that's a child care social worker in Manhattan, but does a lot of work with Elizabeth Taylor's charity. Like, you look at them across the spans of husbands, like, grandkids from all over that are all beautiful. Like,
how could you not be? Her genes have to be that strong.
Yeah.
The kid generation, like, not as good looking as the grandkid generation. There's one grandkid with just the same violet eyes that are,
I was wondering who got the
beautiful.
Eyes.
Beautiful. Appears like all of her grandchildren really very much do dote on her. Everybody's very involved with continuing her legacy and carrying on the work that she did for the foundation.
Yeah, I think so. I've had in my mind for a lot of years now a comparison of, like, the Kennedys, who, like, have this generational wealth and tends to propel them into service. And I mean, they're rich. They don't need big paychecks. So they work in public service. They, you know, they highlight social issues. They're very public spirited. Mm. My point is that I think that with Taylor's grandchildren, like, I'm sure they've all inherited mountains of money and have, rather than, you know, I don't know,
waste it
grubbing or going to work in financial stuff, like, they're it's a social worker, it's a, you know,
they're living normal lives. They didn't want to be actors and actresses. They're not trying to be famous.
Get your Harvard degree and go to Wall Street. Like, you're not helping anyone. So it sounds like they are committed to, it's this much older model of, like, what it means to be born rich. You help people.
So tell me about trash cans for Larry Fortinsky.
Oh.
Last husband. Last chance to trash.
I realize we
didn't do trash cans for Richard Burton, so we'll go back and do that at the end.
I'm not sure that
he didn't cheat. They met each other in sobriety. Like,
And it really
seems supportive. I don't know that it was a love match, but I mean, I don't know that deserves trash
can.
They
were each other's sober coaches until they weren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't think he was bad to her.
And I think, I think they were kind of both moonlighting in the other person's world.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
And at a certain point, like,
well, Elizabeth had played pinball now. She was ready to walk on the wild side. I don't know. One and a half. It's not very trashy.
I don't know if I'd even give him what. He could just be a zero trash can.
Okay. Richard Burton. I'm going to let you call that, Erica.
Yeah.
He has to have one for
guest choice.
For Sybil. I kind of want to give him one for cheating on Liz, but then in a way, she kind of betrayed him by not supporting his sobriety. Like, she would often kind of feed into it and be like, I just have a drink. Even though she was the one that talked him into becoming sober.
Right.
So it kind of cancels that one out.
Is it a karma wash, too?
Once your spouse
it really is.
Yeah, once your spouse starts turning yellow, it is a little incumbent on to stop drinking with them.
He oddly had a very strange fear of doctors. His mother died in childbirth. Of course, her 13th child. So I think that's understandable. Jeez. But he blamed doctors the rest of his life for it.
Wow.
Did not trust doctors.
I'm sure that's what his father did,
too. And then, of
course,
he's with a woman who had, 26 surgeries at one point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she was literally always ill, and he had a lifelong fear of him. And she made him go check in at, I think, Cedars-Sinai. and get checked out. And he could tell just by touching him that his liver was enlarged.
Ooh.
So, I mean, she encouraged it, but it's difficult to encourage something if you can't walk that line too.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like I said, yeah, I think
I want you to get healthy, but
cheating.
Don't ruin my good time.
I'll give him one for Sybil. But as far as everything else, like I think
he and Liz are a wash.
I do too.
Okay.
Can we give him one for his liver? I'm kind of not kidding. Like that, you got to work at that.
I'm shocked that like that's something else that I remember in the book them saying that it's shocking what it didn't do to her health at the time that right. it did do to his. I know in one part of the book they were talking about, well, one thing she did that he wouldn't do was she ate. She would still mm-hmm. eat a meal, and so she would absorb some of that.
That's
and
how
so
she could
never
drink
truly
all day.
Got drunk all day, whereas he just kept drinking. And he was belligerent or not, I mean, not even belligerent, just blind blackout at mm-hmm. a certain point where right. she could just keep tossing it back. It's one of the ways she outdrank him.
I wonder, though, I mean, also, she, again, had back problems mm-hmm. her whole, like, she had pain her whole life.
And I think a lot of it for both of them were self-medicating because mm-hmm. he also had injuries. I forget mm-hmm. exactly how he got them, but at one point, his wrist and arm, he lost feeling and couldn't use it. And he hated pills, just like he hated doctors and stuff. And so at one point he did have to start taking pain medication too. And that's when he was sober. And he didn't like the feeling of that. And, you know, so I do believe they both were self-medicating, not just emotional,
right?
You know, issues that they had. And his father was a really bad alcoholic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he definitely had it in the genes as well. But also self-medicating for pain.
Sure.
I mean, honest to God, when my back hurts, I'll pour a drink.
Right.
I don't have pain pills, and I don't like taking them anyway, so.
Yeah.
Only thing that'll work.
Yeah.
So, those are the trashy divorces of the world's most beautiful woman,
I mean,
Violet Eyes.
Some trashy, some not trashy, some not even divorces.
It's less trashy than you actually think when you get yes. into the details of it. I think she's so sympathetic to me. I hope other people find her that way, because she was genuinely a good person.
She really seems to have been. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, she had no
I don't think she hurt
to...
anybody on purpose.
Right.
She might have had 7 marriages, but it was not.
Yeah, that headline, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, 7 husband, whatever, 8 mm-hmm. husbands, 7 marriages. Like, that headline makes it seem horrifically trashy.
That she's just vampy and does this shit on purpose. And the truth of the matter is, she kind of bounced into the next relationship. And mm-hmm. One was always a reaction into the other one. She had 2 great loves.
Mm-hmm.
And that she loved very much. And I don't know.
So a life, because I'm going to ask you both, like, what's your favorite or most surprising thing about it? But to me, Elizabeth Taylor, total survivor. She has had tragedy, addiction, weight problems, like highest highs, lowest lows. She's a survivor. 79 years old. Like, there's something that I found really touching. Like, we've talked about it over the episode. She just makes these connections with people.
Yes.
Do you know that Spencer Tracy, who starred as her father in mm-hmm. Father of the Bride, until his death, anytime anything happened to her, good or bad, for the rest of her life, since they started that movie together, he would send her a telegram to Kitten from Pops until he died. Like, those are the kind of relationships.
That's the effect she had on people. Everybody loved her. Yeah.
Makes. Like, she gave her heart to people that were wounded, mm-hmm. and it really brought out the best in her. So that's the thing that surprised me the most is just how very real
and
she
humble
was.
And humble.
And, like, the most beautiful woman in the world, and I can tell mm-hmm. the dirtiest joke you've ever heard.
Oh, she loved to cuss. She would love this episode for the F word. Like, that actually was one thing Burton didn't like. Even though he cussed and raged and did all, he did not like her sailor's mouth.
Did not like her potty mouth.
Did not think that was ladylike. And I mean, she loved to cuss. And it was a reaction to her beauty.
Yeah.
She was trapped within this beautiful body, mm-hmm. and it was her way of rebelling as being like, God damn it, fucking A. You know,
I love that.
I love that about her.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who wants to go next? Like, what's your favorite thing or the thing you learned or the thing that surprises you about Elizabeth Taylor? Do you have a wrap up?
So I think for me, like, in my household growing up, when she was, you know, very much alive and very still ever present in the media, like, I feel like I absorbed a very one-dimensional picture of her. And so, yeah, learning, like, how genuinely caring she was and how, like, she stayed in touch with her exes mm-hmm. and, you know, like...
Most of them.
Yeah. She really does seem like she genuinely loved everyone in her orbit. Like,
I agree. Like, I think people get an idea of because of her cool beauty that she was a cold woman.
Right.
And that's kind of what I thought growing up, is that, you know, her kids were probably all in boarding schools.
So
they
aloof.
Were at some point.
Yeah.
But she loved her children. She was devoted to her children. There was somebody, I forget who it was in the book, said that she played with her children like she was a child. Mm-hmm. She didn't act like a mother. Like, and she was so generous to her friends and family. And again, with the set, I forget who, it was Taming of the Shrew. The makeup artist had to call in sick, and everybody was already on set. She was like, I got it. Not a problem. Did the makeup for like 50 extras herself.
Oh my God.
And the entire cast. Like, she was just that kind of, you know, you would think somebody at her stature would be above that. And she was not afraid to get down and get dirty and say, let's get this done.
I love it.
Like, yeah. She had an incredible work ethic. She mm-hmm. was, she was known as one shot Liz, one take Liz.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, she's, incredibly professional. Even, was it Gielgud that said he had never worked with anybody that never flubbed? No, it was Michael Caine said she mm-hmm. was the only actor he'd ever worked with that never flubbed a line.
Wow.
That's why she was one shot Liz. Like,
wow.
She was a consummate professional in every way.
Right.
I love that.
We love her.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I'm not even sure. I'm really not sure I've seen many of her movies from, you know, back in the day. So, yeah, I think she was just sort of a sex symbol and beauty icon. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that she was actually a talented and three-dimensional person as well. But she is super three-dimensional.
Yeah.
I'm just apparently
super talented and professional.
Yes.
Aside from being like a completely fall down drunk at the time.
I just heard you say, hey, Alicia, we're about to watch a lot of Elizabeth Taylor movies. Ooh. In our future.
That'd be great, yeah.
Hey, what an episode.
Yes.
What a life.
Yes. Erica Kelly of Southern Fried True Crime, where can people find you and your podcast?
You can find me just about anywhere. My network is Spreaker. I'm at southernfriedtruecrime.com. You'll find everything about me there. I'm on Twitter, it's South Fried Truth. Best I could do, but I kind of like it.
Yeah.
But really, any social media platform, you search Southern Fried True Crime and you'll find me.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for
thanks
coming.
Thanks for having me.
Today, you had a good time.
My God, I had such a good time. I love, love, love Elizabeth Taylor. So, yeah, I was so excited to do this.
Yeah,
thanks
we had to do
me.
It. Looking forward to this.
Listeners, thanks for staying patient. I hope it was worth the wait. You would have bought me on the head. We'd done this divorce without you. Like, you
I
mean, had to
I
be
probably
here.
Not. I would have quit being your friend. No, maybe that's a little extreme, but I would have been mad at you for a long time.
I don't want that.
No one wants that.
I know how you write stories. I don't want that at all. I'm good. So solid. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Would you like to tell our listeners anything? Do you want them to do anything?
I need you to go in and, first of all, if you're not already subscribed, I need you to do that immediately. And please go give them a 5-star review. I know it's a pain in the ass. It is.
I thought you were just going to say keep it trashy, but this is better.
No, I'm telling you, this show is amazing. These ladies actually work really freaking hard. Yeah, it's conversational, but they really do their research and put their heart and soul into it. And it's a quality show. And believe it or not, those ratings really, really help their visibility in the charts and can propel them forward. So, well, hey, keep it trashy, but also support your favorite trashy divorces show.
That.
Ba-boom.
Boom. End scene. We can't do much better than that.
Nope.
Thank you, Erica.
Happy Mother's
You're
Day.
Welcome.
And
happy Mother's Day.
We will see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
And thanks to you for listening. Trashy Divorces is a Hemlock Creatives production, created and produced right here in Atlanta, Georgia, by us, Stacy and Alicia, with a little research and writing help from the brilliant Melissa O.
Our art is by Sydney V. Smith. That's Sydney V. Smith at carbonmade.com. And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. Check her out at Ratsy's Store on Instagram. And definitely drop into Ratsy's Store anytime you're in Oberlin, Ohio.
You can contact us at trashydivorces@gmail.com or find us on the World Wide Web at trashydivorces.com.
If you need more trash candy in your life, our Patreon community includes some of the very best humans around and thousands of hours of bonus content at every level of support. Join the fun at patreon.com/trashydivorces.
Interested in some Trashy Divorces swag? Check out our merch shop and Trash Panda Enthusiasm Society at bit.ly/trashygear.
Want to advertise with us? Reach out to sales@advertisecast.com for more information.
And last but not least, come play with us on social media. I keep most of our Trashy Divorces Instagram hopping. Stacy and I share it up over on Facebook, including our Trashy Divorces podcast discussion group. Come join us over there, and thanks again, everybody, for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.